In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Have you ever thought how so much of our society depends on trust? You're on the jury. Expert after expert comes forward to describe various tests that prove the defendant is guilty. How do you know? Did you do the tests? Could you? Or about that murder weapon found at the scene? Did you find it? We know the FBI itself, the FBI, is not above planting evidence to get a warrant on a presidential candidate. People will always try to deceive you, but right now it is a war for America's future. Everywhere you look, we're at war. It is a constant fight for freedom. And people about to get exposed are going to fight back. That's just how it is. Clearly, someone who knows someone in the White House heard Trump was looking into the origins of the Russian collusion investigation, and he's getting close. As I said, we know that members of the FBI and CIA were working to plant false information to open the investigation on candidate Trump. Imagine what they would be willing to do to protect themselves. You don't have to imagine. That's what we're seeing play out. And as I've watched this play out, it reminded me a lot of our previous shows on disinformation. The grain of truth, the coordinated rollout, the impeccable source, the piling on by influential people in politics and show business, all to reinforce the desired narrative. Scripted responses to previous stages and woven throughout the elements of suspicion and innuendo. Truth doesn't need innuendo. Truth doesn't need people like Adam Schiff to make things up. Truth doesn't need the surrogate of fiction. So on today's show, we'll talk with best-selling author Scott McEwen to get his take as a writer and former author on the scripted rollout. And we'll talk with Ron Rischlak, the co-author of Disinformation. I'd like to welcome Scott McEwen back to the show. He is best-selling author of American Sniper, and he's got his own series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series, and another great book, too, Camp Valor. And he has a sequel to that coming up pretty soon here, too. Scott, it's always great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you guys as well.
You know, we wanted to have you on to get your take on this latest impeachment insanity, or I should say the latest incarnation of it. I'm sure you don't have any opinions at all on this.
You know, I do, Mark. I have a couple, and, you know, and I think that most concerning to me is, and, you know, to call this an impeachment is really a misnomer right off the bat. This is merely a continuation of the attempted coup of this president that's gone on for 3 years, in my opinion. It really is. And I think that the entire thing is a charade. It's a charade orchestrated by the Democrats who have got no message, no vision, and no, if you will, legislative history other than to attack this president. And I don't see that changing for the next, if you will, 1 year to the ultimate election in this country in November of 2020.
No, and you're right, they have no message. It used to be that when you would compete or run for office, you'd describe the great job that you'll do as president. And you try to outcompete your competitor and say, you know, how your policies are going to be better for the American people. And we're not hearing any of that. It's all anti-Trump, anti-Trump, anti-Trump. We hate Trump. Trump's a racist. On and on down the list. And now the latest with, as you say, the holdover from the previous Russia collusion stuff. I do find the timing a bit odd, and I was curious your thoughts on that. You being a best-selling author, I thought maybe you might have some opinions on that, because it really looks like there were some machinations here. So you've got Attorney General Barr over there in Italy, where a lot of people, including George Papadopoulos, have said that the Russian collusion hoax began with Professor Mifsud, and now the latest is that guy's on the run. He's disappeared now again. That, of course, isn't suspicious. But what do you think? Is Barr about to look where he's not supposed to?
I think that there is already knowledge on the street, and I've got it from some pretty good sources of my own, that you know, there's a number of indictments that are about to come out, that the IG report is going to be beyond damning, if you will, on the Democratic side. It's going to be extremely, extremely, if you will, telling of all the things that went down in the deep state attempting to do this Russian hoax and all of the illegal acts that were done with the FISA warrants, et cetera. And I think that, you know, the way these Democrats operate, and it just seems to be the way that Washington operates, frankly, at this juncture, is you have to have a counterclaim, something to counter the claims of the other side with. Even if they're not related, you've got to start a counteroffensive before they come back at you, because they perceive that as being two wrongs make a right or something to that effect.
Well, I do think so much of this is scripted, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next segment maybe, but it reminds me a lot of FDR, who said that nothing happens by accident in politics. And why do you think that they think that we can't see right through them and that this is just Russia collusion 2.0?
I really believe that this group of Democrats that we have there now, particularly Schiff, Nadler, and, you know, not so much Nancy, as much as I have my differences with Nancy's politics, et cetera, she may be the brightest one of all of them, and I'm not sure she still has her entire mind left. But,
no.
You know, I mean, it's frightening when you think about it that these guys, you know, basically, I think Schiff, and I just saw a report as we were speaking, and it looks pretty certain that he orchestrated this entire latest charade of the Ukrainian thing, and that they orchestrated the entire, quote, whistleblower, which was nothing more than a leak that was created, and the whole thing, the whole claim was created by lawyers for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I have seen that as well. It looks like he learned of the whistleblower before it was ever made public, before it was ever even submitted to Congress. What's interesting, too, is right in through all of that, he dispatched one of his little minions over to Ukraine in early August. So
right.
It is looking very much like collusion, and as you said, it's all orchestrated. You know, one of my Twitter followers, he goes by the name Red Shannon, and I'll put the tweet up there on our website. He said that the Dems are acting like cornered beasts, and they're willing to do anything to survive. Their tactics have shifted from illegitimate president to save our butts from prison / death penalty. They never thought Trump would survive this long. I found that interesting, and that they're cornered beasts. What are your thoughts on that?
I'd have to agree with that person. I really would. And I really believe that this is all desperation. A lot of, you know, that this entire charade is desperation. I would propose to your listeners and to you, Mark, that if everything in that letter is absolutely true and some whistleblower, you know, allegedly found this, conversation took place between the president and the Ukrainian president, and congratulations, would you mind looking into this? I do not believe that was a crime. I do not believe that was even out of line, frankly. I think that the president might even have a duty to do so, to find out if an executive from this government. Now, yeah, the guy might be running for president, but I don't think Trump believes, and I don't believe that Biden is going to survive this affair, if for no other reason the Democrats don't want him. So at the end of the day, if all of this is true, is this grounds for an impeachment? My response is absolutely not. Absolutely. He has a right to do that. He has a right to make this inquiry. And there's no threat there. There's no quid pro quo there. There is nothing close to what Biden has done and or his son. And I believe that, you know, this is just another charade. Look at this collusion, this kind of stuff. And it's all been orchestrated.
It has been. And it really does come off as a charade. Plus, you said it right. He's within his rights to do this. He's the chief law enforcement officer. And so he's going after corruption. I think he's absolutely right to do this. All right, everyone, stay with us. We'll have more with author Scott McGeown after this. And are the Democrats working from a script here? And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to author Scott McGeown. He's a best-selling author, I should say, of American Sniper. And he has his own series of books, Sniper Elite, and we'll link all of those up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look on the show page or on the store page. And we were talking during the break that he has a sequel to Camp Valor coming out. Scott, why don't you talk to our audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is 2.0 of Camp Valor. Very excited about it. It's called Trigger Mechanism. It's up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all your regular sites. It was delayed a little bit. We had some thoughts and went back to the writing process and got it done. But it's scripted towards a young adult audience and the young adult audience being 12 to 18, but I've had many, many adults that have really enjoyed the series and are asking for it to get there as soon as possible. And, you know, it is
as exciting as the first Camp Valor. We have the same players with some new camp members that have been adopted to come into the series, and the new generation of Camp Valor participants. And it is based on drone technology and all of the intellectual technology that we see getting in planes like the 737 that didn't work, and other things that are being run from computer modules as opposed to live drivers. And the bad guys basically take the planes, trains, and automobiles and convert them and use them for their own evil purposes to attack society. Wow. It is not a far-fetched idea, and
no.
I believe it's pretty close to reality.
It is absolutely
every day.
Yeah, I was just going to say it is absolutely close to the reality. Just this morning, I was seeing that the health department was saying that be aware, hackers can now hack into people's pacemakers. That's frightening.
Yeah, so we're out there now that is not being protected. And, you know, it's a frightening thought to think that, you know, that the guidance systems of airplanes, the guidance systems of these trucks that they're now testing to drive with drivers, cars that they're now testing, we know Uber's doing it now, to just take those and weaponize that technology. It is the next phase of cyber warfare, and it's real. And that's what we explore in the fiction zone that we do it with our young campers that have to stop this stuff. But essentially that's the next generation of warfare that we're going to see is all drone warfare. And that's, you know, we'll see it within both the military as well as I believe in society in general.
Well, it's definitely terrifying to think that you could be driving down the highway at 65 miles an hour on the slow side. And suddenly a truck also doing that suddenly decides to swerve left. And all of the trucks on the highway suddenly decide to swerve left. I mean, that's terrifying to think about it. So definitely looking forward to that. You said it's coming out in February. And so people can pre-order that, I hope.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on all our sites, barnesandnoble.com and all the rest of them. And I think it's a great book. And it's designed for a young adult audience, as was the first. But I think the adults are enjoying it every bit as much as the young adults.
Yes.
And one of the things I like is we've now got three different library associations for different state library associations that have adopted the book for what they call gateway material for kids that don't like to read that are now reading books like Camp Valor because they enjoy the action and they enjoy the message.
That is all terrific. And we certainly enjoyed the book. And if people have not read the first one, that is certainly available. So getting back to the Democrats, it's funny that we're talking about writing and scripting and whatnot, because that really, to me, is how they're coming across here. The Democrats really are acting like someone handed them a script. And you were talking about Schiff, you know, that this was all a charade and that he really set all of this up. It comes across that way. Except the problem is Trump keeps going off script. It's like watching actors who've never done improv before. Do you think it's odd that Nancy decided to move forward with this non-impeachment before even so much as reading the transcript of the phone call? I mean, that was just bizarre beyond measure.
Well, I think what we're seeing here is two different things playing out in front of us, Mark. The first is that they're obviously the attack Trump mode is what their ultimate goal is. But also Nancy Pelosi is fighting for her life. I believe that Nancy Pelosi realizes that her chairmanship of that party and her, you know, basically her being in charge of the Democrats is not only being fought against her by others in her party, the new wave of socialist, more leftist Democrats within her own, but she's just trying to hold on to some type of power. And the only way she can do that is to try and appease the more radical elements within her party. And that's why she's ultimately gone to this, what they call now an impeachment inquiry, which is nothing more than the same show that Jerry Nadler's been trying to charade out there with the Judiciary Committee. They don't want to go to a full House debate. They don't want to call witnesses where there's going to be counter witnesses and things of that nature for both sides. They don't want an actual impeachment proceeding because they can't control that like they will. And if they do go to impeachment, let's assume they do, and they vote to impeach, they know they don't have the votes in the Senate. to get it done. So what they want to do is just do theater that they can script it out, as you've just referenced, and not have to have the cross-examination that really is going to show that their entire argument is nothing more than an attack on the president that we've seen from day one.
Yeah, and I've said that for a while now on Twitter, is that the Democrats really don't want impeachment because, guess what, it's not just you standing up there issuing talking points. The president will be able to defend himself. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the odd messaging right now coming from the Democrats. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Scott McEwen about the impeachment insanity coming out of the left. Scott is the best-selling author of American Sniper, and he's got a sequel to Camp Valor coming up in February. You can get the first book of that. Just head over to Amazon.com, or you can see all of his books on our store page at iSpyRadio.com. And so, Scott, I want to talk to you about some of the odd messaging that has been coming out here, really. The one in particular that really gets me is that Nancy is trying to claim the moral high ground here. She was saying earlier this week and again in the news conference on Wednesday that this is nothing to be happy about. This is nothing to rejoice over. Impeachment is a somber moment that requires prayer. And I pray for the president every day. So now the Democrats are trying to inject God into all of this. And that might have worked if they hadn't been the ones trying to kick God out of their 2016 convention. So I just find this an odd message to go to. Do you think this is at all effective?
You know, I really believe that Nancy has had her best days maybe about 15, 20 years ago. I mean, I truly believe that she has mental breakdown, if not complete, you know, moments of not lacking in lucidity at all. And I think that she just comes up with these things that she says. I don't know if it's before she has a cocktail at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or when it is, but it seems to me like she's completely disjointed. That she has, you know, people attacking her from the left of her own party, obviously from the Republican side, and she has no message whatsoever to it other than, you know, their attempts to take guns, to, you know, have late-term abortions and all the other things that really is their legislative view that I haven't seen whatsoever anything that's been brought up or even attempted by them at this stage. So I don't know what their messaging is other than the fact that she feels as if she can go back to some type of prayer for the, you know, the commander in chief, which is obviously a laudable message and one we should always believe in as Americans, because if the president fails, then this country fails in many respects. And so, I just think it's complete travesty. And I think it's some type of an excuse for otherwise bad behavior.
Well, it seems rather rich to be the party of infanticide and then try to inject God into all of this. I just don't see that as being a winning message. They really do seem blind, I think, in a lot of ways to their own hypocrisy. You know, as I mentioned there with God, and now she's trying to say that she's appealing to God for the president. I think another one who's really blind to his own hypocrisy is Biden. He immediately ripped into Trump, saying that using his office, meaning Trump, to investigate a political opponent is an abuse of power. I guess he slept through the last 2 years of the Obama administration, where Obama used the power of his office to open investigations on Trump, not to mention the whole IRS scandal. What are your thoughts on Biden here?
I think Joe Biden is done. I mean, I don't think there's any way he survives the current inquiries with his son, nor should he, frankly. But I think that he is done as an effective political figure. And I think that the Democrats have already gotten that message. They're looking for a way to get him out and move to Plan B. And what is Plan B with this crop of candidates? I mean, is a very frightening thought, Mark, because I'm telling you right now, I've said it from day one, and I'm still not convinced that Hillary Clinton is not going to come back and try and go for another run at this. And I really believe that the crop of candidates that are there right now, none of them are electable. None of them are viable. And I don't think Elizabeth Warren, given her left-wing views, is going to survive even the Democratic, you know, nomination. So they're looking for some excuse, something they can do to get somebody in there that is semi-competent. And I think Joe, I really believe that he is a liability. And I don't think they're getting the donors they need. They're not getting the money they need to back this guy. And I don't think that he's going to make it that much further. I thought he was already done when he started had those health issues during that last, quote, environmental debate or whatever they want to call that, when he started bleeding from his eyes. I just think that physically and mentally, Joe Biden is passe, and I think they realize that. And how they pivot and where they pivot to is really the only question at this stage.
Yeah, I still wonder though too if, because I've said that I almost wonder if all of this is just a giant exercise in messaging, in the sense that they're trying to put out different socialist messages and see what sticks. I have never seen any of these candidates as really being an effective candidate against Trump. I don't see that. I mean, even if Hillary was to get back into the race, I don't see her as being effective. I mean, she's old, she's tired, she's bitter. She has health problems too. I just don't see her getting back into this. I really do wonder if this is just a giant focus group. They want to start testing some of the socialist messages and then run a real candidate in 2024.
That could well be the case. And unfortunately, Canada is going to be the current governor of California.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. The other thing, too, that I find to be really interesting on Joe, just to get back to him, the one thing you have still not heard from Joe is we welcome any and all scrutiny.
Well, they're not going to do it. At the end of the day, if we know right now, I mean, the fact that he admitted that he had that prosecutor fired, that the prosecutor has signed documents under oath. And granted, he's a biased witness, but he still has a credible argument that the reason he was fired was because of the investigation into the company that his son was appointed to. His son was appointed to be a director in that company to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in certain circumstances, 2 months after he was released from the Navy for being caught with cocaine or whatever, snorting cocaine. How is this guy qualified to do that? It's all quid pro Joe. That's exactly what went on here. And there's no other way to approach it. I mean, any sensible person, whatever your party, I believe, would have to look at this guy and say, what the heck is going on? And I think that he's dirty, and I think he's going to be proven to be dirty, and they can't sell it. They just can't sell it to the American people. Even the left doesn't like him. And let's face it, the radical left within the Democratic Party, he's not left enough for them. Yeah. So I just think they're caught between a rock and a hard place. I think that what you're going to see is when they lose, the Democratic Party is going to break up. I think the Democratic Party is going to become a socialist party, and the current, if you will, old school Democratic Party might survive. But I think that they're going to go full socialist very soon. And I think that they're going to at least try that. And like you say, they're going to try the messaging and see if it works. I hope to God and hope for this country that nobody buys into this junk.
I certainly hope so. And I think in the meantime, they're going to try to convict Trump by innuendo. I mean, talk about a red herring. You know, that's how you get a red herring through to your reader, is you use innuendo and try to lead them down the path. And I think that they're hoping that they will be able to bleed off 1% of the vote, because in some of those states, 1% difference would have flipped it to Hillary instead. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting the next year and change. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I enjoy very much. I'm very pleased to see how well you guys are doing, and keep up the messaging. God knows Oregon needs that message. And, you know, you guys are doing a good job of doing it. I think you're the only ones, or some of the only ones, that are standing, you know, to the sensible, if you will, conservative side of this fence and giving that messaging. And I really appreciate what you guys do in that state.
We really appreciate that, too. We appreciate your kind words there. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Just got done wrapping things up there with author Scott McEwen. You can find out all about his books there on our webpage, iSpyRadio.com, and just head to the store page. He's got about a half a dozen books or more up there now, I think. I'd like to welcome now Ron Rischlock. He is co-author of Disinformation, another book that is up there on our store page as well. As I said, he's the co-author of Disinformation. Former spy chief reveals secret strategies for undermining freedom, attacking religion, and promoting terrorism. Just absolutely fascinating book. Highly recommend this. Ron, it is great to talk to you again. It's been almost a full year.
Well, thanks, Mark. It's great to be back.
Yeah, so we'd like to actually start. We actually re-aired your show from last year, last week, but I'd still like to kind of remind our audience a little bit about Disinformation in case people missed that show. What exactly is Disinformation? Where did it come from, and how is it deployed?
Well, disinformation is a technique, a science, if you will, that was really perfected in Russia and particularly the Soviet Union. And it's a matter of putting out a false narrative, but putting it out from a trusted source, putting out in such a way that it's very hard, if not impossible, to disprove, so therefore it has a great deal of credibility. And in the book Disinformation, my co-author Ion Mahaipacepa, who was the head of foreign intelligence for Communist Romania, explain how over the years the Russians and then Soviets and now Russians again and now people in America as well have perfected this, have worked on ways to put out false narratives, use them for a political end, and try to build it around there's a grain of truth you try to build, but you also try to make sure it's not falsifiable. You can't disprove it, and you let it grow. It becomes a tremendous weapon of propaganda, if you will. During the Cold War, the Soviets had more people working on disinformation than they did in their military.
Yes, that was shocking. I remember that from our discussion in your book. It really was amazing, not just the size of the actual officers that were involved in this. You said more than a million, but there were several million people working as part of this. And I think that's one of the things that really impressed me the last time we talked is that this is really a very widespread, coordinated effort, and it attacks somebody from multiple sources. You've got politicians involved. You've got the media that plays a very key role in this, but even the arts as well, film and theater, where they're developing movies, and also even academia. I don't see any similarities between disinformation and what's going on right now. Do you?
I think perhaps the Soviets captured some level of the arts and the cinema, the movies, stuff like that. I don't think they had the media in their grasp the way it seems like so much disinformation is today. I mean, it's amazing the narratives that get put out, the narratives that get built, and so far I have to say that the Trump administration has been amazing in terms of defeating it left and right and exposing the problems that have been brought up. But they keep coming back.
They do, and it really is fascinating to watch this roll out, because it really exposes, I think, the psychology of people as well, in terms of and the psychology of messaging as well, in the sense that a lot of times we tend to gravitate towards the first message that we hear, and we sort of stake a psychological position in that, and then it becomes hard to shake people from that. And we see it all the time now in today's society. People see the first headline, they gravitate to that, they don't bother to do any digging beyond that in a lot of cases, and that becomes their reality. And so it becomes very hard then at that point. It's a constant uphill battle, really, to turn people back away from that and say, no, this is the reality.
No, it really is. And that's the old-time story about, the newspaper comes out and it's got the big accusation on the headlines, and then the retraction is buried on the fourth page 3 days later.
Yes.
So to figure out how to combat that, it was very hard for the United States versus the Soviet Union. I think it's been very hard in recent times among politicians trying to fight back against a situation where it feels like the media is in bed largely with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, the goal of disinformation is to change people's perceptions of reality. You mentioned in your book rewriting history, manipulating records and documents and whatnot to destroy the reputation of national or religious leaders or accomplish other goals. And they effectively did that. They changed world perception of Pope Pius, the pope that was there during World War II, who was universally hailed as a hero, to just one generation later, he has become known as Hitler's Pope. It's shocking the effectiveness of this.
Now, it truly is, and the way they turned the United States populace against the military during Vietnam, it's interesting to note that this information was perfected within the Russian and Soviet Empire as an internal political matter. For many, many years, it was always the new leader using it to discredit the previous leader and build up his own new image. And that went on and on for a long time until eventually when Andropov became head of the KGB, not, he became prime minister later, but when he's head of KGB, he recognized he could do this at an international level. Hmm. And they could use it to discredit foreign nations. And then that became a big deal within the Soviet Union. And they cultivated anti-Semitism. They cultivated terrorism. They, as you mentioned, how they went against religions and the Catholic Church through accusing a pope of having been a Nazi. They cultivated the story of the CIA being behind the assassination of John F. Kennedy, President
yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
All those kind of things. But that's an international level. Now, what we're seeing today, it seems to me, is we're seeing disinformation being employed once again domestically, once again internally, with folks trying to take down a president, trying to put out these narratives about President Trump. And so far, he's batted them all down. And, of course, it seems like you never catch a breath in between them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we definitely want to talk to you more about that in the next segment there. I've got two more questions I want to ask you from this segment, but we will hold those over until the next one. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Ron Rishlock, co-author of Disinformation. Talking about disinformation today. We're doing that with Ron Rishlock. He is the co-author of Disinformation. Former spy chief reveals secret strategies for undermining freedom, attacking religion, and promoting terrorism. The author of the book is Lieutenant General Ihan Pacepa, former head of the Romanian's disinformation campaign. This is, again, just a fascinating discussion. We were talking during the break there. We're really going to have to hold you over to next week because we've just got so much we really want to talk to you about. So that eases things up a little bit as far as the time is concerned, because one of the questions I have for you is, did the CIA, you mentioned that the Soviets used disinformation to paint the CIA as being behind the murder of JFK. Although, having said that, looking back at what we know now, I don't think it would surprise anybody if, in fact, they were really, there's that grain of truth. You know, they did it, and so we helped frame them for that. So, but anyway.
That's an element, always around a grain of truth, right?
Yes, absolutely. So my question, though, is, did the CIA adopt this? Did they also use disinformation? I can certainly see them latching onto this kind of thing. And I'm thinking in particular of Operation Mockingbird. This was mentioned in the so-called Family Jewels report that came out. It was initially, some of it anyway, came out in the early, mid-70s, I guess, in response to people accusing the CIA as being involved in Watergate. But it was fully declassified in 2007. And it came out that Operation Mockingbird was, in fact, a real thing. There was rumors of it for years. It was a CIA program to enlist and work with media and front groups to spread their own propaganda. So was that disinformation that they had latched onto?
I think it probably it was a way of the CIA having recognized that there's a valuable tool. Operation Mockingbird was working with the press, but also with student groups, I think, as well, during Vietnam. They got some students, and that got exposed, and it was a big embarrassment. Even though the Soviets and the counter-war groups were absolutely co-opting students and using that, so it's a very one-sided kind of thing. If you get caught using disinformation, if an American agency like the CIA is caught using sort of a covert, tricky thing like that, it's a huge embarrassment, and that's what Operation Mockingbird ended up being.
Hmm.
But there's no doubt that the CIA would recognize the value of this weapon of disinformation and use it in whatever way they could.
Well, it certainly looks like we're seeing elements of that right now. You had mentioned earlier that it was a science, and so... And it really does come off that way. So are there like full training manuals that they had developed to be able to teach people this? How did that work exactly in terms of all of the agents that were working this?
One of the things that amazed me the most was precisely along these lines. So I'm working with Pacepa, and Pacepa would say, well, in our manual, you know, they bragged about this operation or that operation. And I'm thinking, there's no way in the world a covert agency is going to publish and talk about the different operations they've undertaken and how they accomplish them. And I kind of called him out on that. And he said, no, really. And he would not necessarily have the, in fact, original reference book because they were closely guarded. But he would give me three or four other sources that had cited these. You know, these things really existed. They were and then he started thinking about it, saying, you know, these guys developed a science that they were very proud of, and they wanted to publish it. So they kept the manuals themselves tight. But, yeah, they, in fact, bragged about these things within their papers, and they had training manuals, and they taught people, and they're numerous. I work with Pacheco, but there are numerous other lower-level agents who have defected, who sometimes escaped, and have revealed their stories and their sources and their training, and they all point back to the same thing and say, yeah, there were these manuals. Yes, there was this training. Yes, there were these teachers.
Has the manual ever surfaced?
I don't – it was reported on in some papers that were there are a couple of different caches of papers that were reviewed, were either released or were summarized and written about when certain archives – there was a brief period of time after the collapse of the Soviet Union when archives were accessible. During that time, a couple folks smuggled out some major sections of papers. Others wrote reports that were not accessible afterwards. They refer to those documents and those training manuals. I have not seen an entire manual that, in fact, it's been released.
Well, that would be pretty awesome if one of those conveniently leaked out here, because it would certainly put proof to the pudding here. Also, one of the things that we had talked about last time, or this may have been one that we had meant to, but we never got around to, in the book it says that millions of Soviet agents were working in the West. Well, 1 million were working in the West, and then several million contacts and informants and everything else that had worked their way into academia, worked their way into the military. I mean, just shocking to think that we have these active Soviet agents working in positions of power and authority. So when the Cold War ended, whatever happened to those millions of agents? I mean, did they just quietly say, oh, well, I guess we lost and now we embrace America?
No, most of them are still there. And, you know, one of the things is a whole lot of folks who did a whole lot of work to support the Soviet Union did so without pay, without necessarily considering themselves an agent. They did so out of a motivation that they perhaps thought it was important to maintain a balance of power. Perhaps they were attracted to communism, you know, whatever it might be. The Soviet term for them was useful idiots. You know, there were a lot of useful idiots who were, and there's a lot who remain dedicated to that kind of an idea and that ideology. Those people, for the most part, stayed in power. This is, and it happened the same thing in the Soviet Union. You know, compare and contrast. When the Nazis were removed from power in Germany, you had denazification hearings where they had panels where people would come forward. And if you had been a serious Nazi, if you had really embraced the ideology, if you had done the bad stuff, you were removed from any position of authority. When the Soviet Union collapsed, nothing. The same people remained in the same slots. And so when Putin came back into power, Putin, a KGB agent, when he came into power, he was very easily able to pick his former allies, his friends, put them in positions of authority alongside him. And they now have a government, in essence, run by intelligence officers.
Wow.
It's really stunning.
Yeah, just pick up where they left off. So, okay, we're up against a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Ron Mirschlag, co-author of Disinformation. Stay with us. Final segment now with Ron Mirschlag. He is co-author of Disinformation, the author of the books Lieutenant General Ion Pacepa, the former head of Romanian's disinformation campaign, who defected to the West. You can find that on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to the store page. It's also available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and pretty much where any books are sold. Highly recommend the book. Very informative, and you'll certainly see a lot of tie-ins to what we are seeing today. Certainly a lot of those elements. So we were talking during the break there, you know, as far as those millions of agents working throughout the West when the Cold War ended, you know, millions of agents working on disinformation, it really makes you wonder how many of them remain active, how many of them, you know, continue to further the information, the interests, I should say, of communism and whatnot. And we both kind of gravitated to John Brennan. It would not surprise me at all if he had some kind of ties there. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, yeah, John Brennan, the former head of the CIA, acknowledged that earlier in his youth he had voted communist or he supported the Communist Party. That was stunning when he revealed that. Stunning to me, anyway. And it seemed like it got shrugged off quite a bit that a guy who was a communist ended up heading the CIA.
Yeah, you would think that would get somebody's attention. You know, it's kind of a red flag that somebody was voting for our enemies. And here he is now, the head of the CIA. One of our guests, John Kiriakou, who actually used to work for the CIA, he has absolute animosity for that guy. He is convinced that Brennan was the one that began this whole plan about the Russian collusion thing, and also personally attacked him because he exposed some of the CIA. The waterboarding and all that, although he didn't expose it. He just talked about something that was already out there in the public. But there is no love lost whatsoever for John Brennan. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was involved somehow.
Well, now you know, and Trump supposedly revoked his security clearance, and Brennan became a commentator on NBC, MSNBC. And there's a lot of talk that Brennan, it's kind of Brennan's guy inside the Trump administration, who is the secret informer on the whole issue about Ukraine, not Brennan himself, but one of someone he may have hand placed inside the Trump administration. So,
well, and that's the thing that I think gets so frightening here is to think where exactly these active agents could be working right now. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if members of Congress are involved in this. But you're right, is that, I mean, here Brennan has this network of spies that are still loyal to him, still loyal to the mission, and he's got people that close to the president. I mean, it wouldn't shock me at some point if, you know, one of them pulls a gun at some point. I mean, who knows? I mean, it is just frightening to think just how deep this goes.
Well, certainly would like to think that would never happen, but
yes, me too.
But the undermining the authority and turning the ideology upside down and promoting a movement, you know, away from democracy and away from capitalism towards the tyranny of socialism and communism, you know, I think absolutely, because I think there are a lot of people who've bought into that.
Well, certainly we see a lot of socialists running right now on the Democrat side that are out there pushing the ideals of socialism, and you know, it's just one step further to full-blown communism. So it's very concerning. I think America is very much at a potential turning point here, where we either continue down the path of this American experiment, or we really run the risk of losing it forever. I don't see how we could get this back so easily. In the time that we have left with you, we're down to about 3 minutes here. In watching how all of this latest scheme by the Democrats has unfolded, and I think we're gonna have to talk more about this next week. We just don't have time, really. But I have noticed some patterns of behavior from the Democrats, and that really would seem to have some of the hallmarks and earmarks of disinformation, where they do this coordinated effort of releases to the media. The media then helps gin this up. They have these leakers and this, you know, the sanctity of the whistleblower and so on. So in preparation for next week, looking back at the Mueller report and the Russia collusion hoax and the attempt to reframe Trump as a Russian agent, did you see signs then of a disinformation operation at work?
I absolutely did. I think looking back at that from the very beginning, that here's one of the things that you know, stop for a moment and think about this. Working with Pachepa, I've gotten to know a lot of the people who escaped from communism, who lived under the oppression of communism, sacrificed risked everything to come to the freedom of the United States. And they see the United States slipping back toward closer to what they escaped from, and they're terrified. To a person, those people said that Putin would not want Trump. Putin would have favored Hillary Clinton as president. Mm-hmm. Much easier for him to deal with her. So the idea that somehow Putin is colluding with Trump to help Trump win was insane. The idea that Putin is throwing monkey wrenches into the election, undoubtedly true. You know, my guess, probably he thought Hillary would win, like, you know, most people thought Hillary would win. And so he wanted to maybe discredit her. But there's no way in the world, I believe, that he wanted, in fact, Trump to win. And I think, if anything, you saw more collusion, really, with the Democrats.
Oh,
if
absolutely.
Remember back with Obama whispering, you know, after the election, after my re-election, I'll have more leeway. I mean, it's stunning. Stunning things that are done and then the other side is accused of doing.
Yeah, it is. And the media to this day, no big deal. So it's shocking to hear that to a man, everybody that used to live under communism, you know, they're all saying that Putin would have wanted Hillary over Trump. Did any of them say, you know, I really long for the good old days. I really wish that I was under communist rule again.
No, none of the people I talked to. There are some in the Soviet Union and Poland and other places who I think have had trouble with the you know, their life being rocked, particularly older people that suddenly having choices where they never had choices. But no one who risked their life to escape from that wants to go back to that.
I can't imagine. And the reason I ask that is because we have these socialists running now for president. Not a one of them has ever actually lived under socialism, and yet they're out there espousing this. Ron, I want to thank you so much. I really look forward to our continuing discussion next week.
All right, Mark. Well, I enjoyed it very much, too.
Here's something to ponder. The five burglars arrested at the Watergate, one was just a locksmith, but the other four were all former CIA or had connections to the CIA. One of them also had ties to the FBI. The two organizers of the break-in, G. Gordon Libby, former FBI agent, and Howard Hunt Jr., CIA employee. And here's something to do. This coming Saturday, October 12th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Stand Your Ground Rally. It is the kickoff to 2020 here in Oregon to stop the slide of Oregon from becoming the next California. If you want to learn how you can fight back, if you want to meet others who also want to fight back, come and join us. To build on the energy and success of the Timber Unity Rally, there will be training, speakers, and especially fellow patriots. Head to OregonLiberty.org. That's OregonLiberty.org for more information and to register, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.